Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. So we are now in chapter 10 of Sandeha Nivarini, and after completing 9 chapters of Sandeha Nivarini, as we proceed, the thought that comes to your mind is how much Bhagwan has packed in these beautiful articles that he wrote for us way back in the 50s. So many complex spiritual ideas, so many difficult to understand spiritual philosophies Bhagwan has explained to us. Bhagwan has made it easy for us. Bhagwan has emphasized what is relevant for us. Even as he decoded the spiritual mysteries, he also told us how we can translate them in our daily lives. Chapter 9 was all about action. How no one is exempted from karma, and how there is no distinction between men and women in the world, because everyone is actually feminine and there is only one Purusha. And Bhagwan went on to describe the characteristics of this Purusha. Bhagwan also talked about Maya. As we move on in chapter 10, Bhagwan goes again to the depth of spiritual understanding, because there is no solution to our worldly problems without the understanding of the spiritual mystery of everything around us. If we want permanent solution to our recurring problems, the world does not have a medicine which can take care of that. The world does not have a remedy for that. Everything permanent is with the divine. Everything permanent is with the one who is permanent. We cannot go to something which is temporary and seek what is permanent. So Bhagwan goes into the depth of this understanding as he unravels and explains the questions of the Bhakta in chapter 10 of Sandeha Nivarini. So let's listen to what Bhagwan has written. As always, we have split the chapter into various segments. So we will listen to segment 10.1 and then we'll spend some time trying to decipher what Bhagwan has given us.
Well, you look so full of joy today.
You have yourself said that man is the embodiment of joy, isn't it?
Then you must always be in this mood. Do you remain so?
I am trying as far as possible.
Why do you say trying? Does not sorrow flee instantly once reality is known?
But what is the reality, Swami?
All that is unreal. The efforts you undertake, the words you utter, are all unreal. When you know this, the reality will be evident. Remove all the unreal ideas, opinions and the acts, then the truth that is hidden can be seen. Piling up all this on top, if you ask, what is truth? How can it be seen?
How is it possible to take all that is done, spoken, seen, felt and listened to as unreal?
First, understand who is experiencing all these. You refer to the body as I, isn't it? That is the first untruth. When the experiencing I is itself unreal, how can the experiences be real? all have the same Atma. The person who experienced is not you. The person who listened is not you. You are only the all-pervasive witness.
Swami, you said that Atma pervades in everything. Is Atma there in a dead man?
Oh, a good question indeed. Is it your doubt or the doubt of a dead person?
Mine, Swami.
Well, it is only when you have awakened from deep sleep or sushupti that you are aware there is an I, isn't it? In the same manner, the Atma is definitely there in the corpse also.
If Atma is there, then how can we call that person dead?
If you discriminate properly, there is no dying or living. A moving body is called living and a still one is considered dead. In dreams, any number of living bodies and corpses are seen. On waking, they do not exist. Similarly, this world, both moving and still, is non-existent. Death means the fading out of the I consciousness. Rebirth happens when I consciousness comes again. This is what is called birth and death, my boy. Therefore, birth and death is for Ahankara, not for you.
Then, I exist always, is it?
Of course you do. When the I consciousness is there, you exist. When it is not there also, you exist. You are only the basis for the awareness. You are not the awareness.
But they say someone has attained liberation, attained mukti, etc. What is that?
Understanding the root of death and birth, one must destroy completely the awareness of the separate I. That condition is mukti.
So, if there is no death for me, then I and you are one, isn't it?
Who said no? When you are firmly established in that feeling of oneness, the other does not exist.
Until then, in order to identify the real I in the unreal I, they say that the support of a guru is wanted. How far is that true, Swami?
It is only when you have so many eyes that you need someone's support, is it not? When all is one, why seek help? Still, until the aham or I fades out, this speaking I and this listening you have to be there. When that I is gone, whom to speak to? Who listens? All are one.
So that is segment 10.1, and yes, indeed, it is a deeper concept to understand, fathom, and translate into our daily practical life. But if you begin with small steps, we begin with little ways of living this principle, after having understood it, there will be a lot of joy, there will be a lot of satisfaction, there will be a lot of inner contentment and harmony. So in the beginning, Swami is telling the devotee, you look so full of joy today. And then devotee says, Swami, you only said that man is the embodiment of joy, isn't it? And then Swami says, yes, yes. But if you really believe in that, then shouldn't you always be in this way? Shouldn't you always be happy? Shouldn't you always be in this ananda? And then Bhakta says, I am trying, Swami, I am trying to be as far as possible. And that is when Bhagwan goes on to explain, why do you say trying? And the secret of destroying sorrow in our life. That's where Swami says, does not sorrow flee instantly once reality is known? And then he goes on to explain what is reality. In fact, during the Guru Purnima discourse in 1985 in the Purnachandra auditorium, Bhagwan explained this concept of joy, and Swami said, "The Upanishads attempt to give man a faint idea of the measure of that joy that is called as Brahmananda. In the Taittiriya Upanishad, there is the hierarchy of Ananda or joy. And for us to understand this whole concept of joy, the concept of Ananda, the height of human joy is taken as a unit for estimation, the amount of human joy. So what is one unit of human joy, human Ananda, Manushyananda? A person having all the wealthy desires, all the renown that he can earn, all the learning that can be gained, perfect health, undisputed sovereignty, perpetual youth, and so a person who is really worldly wise, very happy, good health and good money and good name and fame, that person's Ananda is one unit of Manushyananda. 100 times this Manushyananda is the Ananda of the celestial singers, which is called Gandharva Ananda. You know, we experience this little joys in our life and we feel so happy and we feel the world has given us so much happiness. But actually, you know, we have got a bullock cart and we think that we have got the Mercedes Benz. We have got a cup of ice cream in our hand and we think that we have got the celestial ambrosia, amrit. So Swami is telling this one unit of Manushyananda into 100 is what is Gandharvananda. 100 times that is the Ananda of the souls of departed beings dwelling in heavenly regions. 100-fold of this is the Ananda of the divine entities. Ajanmaja. Ajanmaja Ananda is the Ananda of departed beings who are dwelling in heavenly regions. The amount of happiness that they experience is 100 times of Manushyananda, which is Gandharvananda. 100 times of Gandharvananda is Ajanmananda. Hundred times of Ajanmananda is Ananda of the gods, Devananda. So the Devananda is such a huge feeling of happiness, which is 100 times more than the Manushyananda, than the Ananda that we experience in the world. And Indrananda, who is the head of the Devas, his happiness is 100 times that of the Devananda. And then comes Brihaspati Ananda, who is the preceptor of Indra. Brihaspati Ananda is 100 times that of Indrananda. Then comes Prajapati Ananda. Prajapati Ananda is 100 times that of Brihaspati Ananda. And finally it is Hiranyagarbha Ananda. Hiranyagarbha is the source of the creation, the cosmic golden manifestation. Hiranyagarbha Ananda is the source, which is 100 times more than Prajapati Ananda. This Hiranyagarbha Ananda is the Brahmananda. It's like the comparison perhaps between an ant and the dinosaur. The happiness that the sages and saints experienced was so tremendously copious than what people experience in the world. And that is the reason why they just love to be where they are. They just went inside and they were in that, they're swimming in that ocean of bliss. And that is how divine beings are. That is how celestial beings are. That is why God described as Satchitananda. And Swami is telling you also are the embodiment of this Ananda. You are also embodiment of this. That's what Swami is telling. But you have to be always in this. And as the devotee asks Swami, yes Swami, I am trying. That is when Bhagavan says, see, if you know the reality, then all the sorrow will go in one instant. And then Bhagavan goes on to explain, all that is unreal. Everything that we see around us is unreal. Because we take them very seriously, we take them to be the reality. That is where the problem starts. Bhagavan explains the effort you undertake, the words you utter, everything is unreal. When you know this, when we live in this consciousness, slowly this reality will become evident. Remove all the unreal ideas, opinions and the acts, then the truth that is hidden can be seen. And of course the bhakta is confused, he's telling Swami, all that is spoken, seen, felt, heard, how can you say that everything is unreal? Then Bhagavan says, you understand who is experiencing all this. You refer to the body as I. That itself is not truth. Because the body itself is not truth. When the experiencing I is itself unreal, how can the experiences be real? Bhagavan is telling. All have the same Atma. The person who experienced is not you. The person who listened to is not you. You are only the all-pervasive witness. And that is when Bhagavan tells the devotee that the way to understand, assimilate this is to slowly remove the I consciousness. When the I consciousness is there, that is what is living. When the I consciousness disappears, that is what is death, Swami says. Rebirth happens when I consciousness comes again. That is what is birth and death. Understanding the root of birth and death, one must destroy completely the awareness of the separate I. Once you destroy this feeling of I, that ahamkara, Swami says aham is self. That is self with capital S. When that self acquires a form in of a body, the body which is temporary, then it becomes ahamkara. And then you feel, this is my body, this is my thing. That whole feeling of I-ness and my-ness, that is what is responsible for birth. And once that feeling goes, you are liberated. You move to the zone of permanent peace, permanent happiness. Bhagavan says, eliminate the I to experience the Ananda. And every man has the potency to elevate himself to this Ananda. what man has to do is he has to get rid of the obstacles that deny this experience. He does not know that all he believes he knows is known only as distorted or deluded. He thinks his waking experiences as real. But actually, whatever you are experiencing in your waking state is also as unreal and as self-contrived as the dream experiences, Swami says. This feeling of I, the I sense, the ego, this constructs the world. This feeling shatters the consciousness of oneness into many, and it takes pride in deceiving itself. It reduces our ananda. This I and my feeling, we think it gives us ananda, it gives us joy, it actually reduces our joy. That's why Swami saying, the more you eliminate this I-ness and my-ness, the more joy you will experience. One becomes truly and genuinely oneself when this I does not intrude. I sets one apart and establishes duality. No I brings together and establishes unity. It leads one to one without a second, to Advaita. So when the I sense arises, persists and disappears, this whole process is called Kshara, which the I sense deteriorating is called Kshara. The one without a second is Akshara. The divine is Akshara because in him this I consciousness does not arise, does not persist, does not disappear. Because he is without a second, the divine is called Akshara. And that is what is symbolized by Om, Bhagavan says. A guru is supposed to be living in that consciousness. In fact, we go to the guru and pray to the guru, hoping that the guru will remove this feeling of I and my within and take us step by step to that joy. Beyond Manishananda, the guru will take us to those heights of bliss, those eclipses of bliss, till we reach Brahmananda. But only a guru established in that ananda can take us there. We have this beautiful bhajan where we laud the guru as the one who can give us that experience of Brahmananda. And we meditate on the Guru to bless us with that ananda. The whole purpose of seeking a teacher is to diminish this little I within us. Every time when we sing this bhajan, I think if we can focus on this feeling of I am nothing, I am nobody, and I don't exist, it is only him. If slowly we develop these kind of feelings, more consciously, more solidly, more convincingly within, then the whole experience of being every day and doing our things will become such a fulfilling experience.
Prathasmaranam Sri Guru Charanam. Prathasmaranam Sri Guru Charanam. Saisha Charanam Sri Guru Charanam. Saisha Sai Charanam Sri Guru Charanam Prata Smaranam Sri Guru Charanam Brahmananda Pradayaka Charanam Brahmananda Pradayaka Charanam 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 Sai Charanam 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 Sai Charanam Prata Smaranam Sri Guru Charanam Sai Charanam Sri Guru Charanam Prata Smaranam Sri Guru Charanam Brahmananda Pradayaka Charanam 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 Sai Charanam 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 Sai Charanam Prata Smaranam Sri Guru Charanam
So next time we sing this bhajan, let us focus and pray for that ananda which is multi-million times more than the ananda that we derive from the world, and pray to Bhagwan to take us to that state, because once we experience that, we will not ever, we will never ever hanker for anything of the world. So the Bhakta goes on and he says, Bhakta asks Bhagwan, Swami, you said that the Atma pervades in everything. Is the Atma there in a dead man? And Swami says, good question. So is it you? Is it your doubt or is the doubt of a dead person? Swami is telling. And then Bhagwan goes on to explain, it is only when you have awakened from deep sleep or sushupti that you are aware that there is an I, isn't it? When we are in deep sleep, we don't have any idea of who we are, what is going on in our mind, in our body, in our thoughts, isn't it? We're just dead in a manner of sorts. So Swami is telling, if you discriminate properly, there is no dying and there is no living. A moving body is called living, and a still one is considered dead. Now, in dreams, we see any number of living bodies, and we also see corpses. But when we wake up, nothing exists, whatever we saw in the dream. Swami says, similarly, in this world, you have things that are moving, you have things that are still. Just like everything you saw in the dream was not reality, everything we are seeing in the world is also not reality. That was night dream. This is daydream. This is daydream. Death means the fading out of the I consciousness, Swami says. Rebirth happens when I consciousness comes again. This is what is birth and death. And Bhagavan says, what exists is that I. And that I is the basis for all awareness. That I, which is the cosmic consciousness. That is the only thing that is true and real. Bhagavan once explained this whole concept by saying that this world is inhabited by men, and the world is called as prapancha. Pra means that which is shining or blooming. Pra is a prefix. Pancha is five. And what are these five that is referred to? It refers to the five elements: air, water, earth, space, ether. It refers to the five sense organs, karmendriyas. It refers to the five sheaths, annamaya, pranamaya, manomaya, vijnanamaya, anandamaya. It refers to the five life breaths, prana, apana, vyana, udana, samana. The Swami is telling, when the prefix pra is added to each of these five categories, prapancha emerges. This means that the world is made up of the five elements, the five senses, the five sheaths, and the five vital airs. The differences among material objects, the variety among individuals, differences in experiences, all these likes and dislikes, attachments and aversions, it is all because of the combinations of the five elements along with the three gunas, sattva, rajat, tama. For one to decipher this, you have to transcend these differences and recognize the all-pervading divine principle. Only then the attachment and hatred can be eliminated, Swami is saying. The five elements are manifestations of the Paramatma. The five sheaths are manifestations of the Paramatma. The five vital airs are the manifestations of the Paramatma. Because it is He who has pervaded everything. It is He who has pervaded the elements. It is He who has pervaded prana, pana, vayana, udana, samana. It is He who has pervaded annamaya kosha, pranamaya kosha, vijnanamaya kosha. It is He who has pervaded the karmendriyas, the jnanendriyas. It is He who is there everywhere. And that is why He is the only one that exists. And that is why the scriptures declare His feet and hands are everywhere. His head, His face, His eyes, His ears are everywhere. The cosmos is nothing but the omnipresence of the divine. Foolishly, many times man thinks that, oh, no one is observing me now. But Swami says there is nothing that you can ever do that is unseen or unnoticed by God. It is impossible to deceive the divine, to deceive the one whose hands and face and ears are everywhere. Sarvam avatritya tishtati, encompassing everything He remains. The divine shines in every object. Swami says it is mark of supreme ignorance to imagine that you can conceal anything from God. And God is also described as acharam charamevacha. He is non-moving and moving. Though He is appearing to be moving, He remains unmoving. God has no hands, but He can grasp anything. He has no feet, but He can move anywhere. He has no eyes, but He can see everything. Swami is telling that is the meaning of acharam charamevacha. Bhagavan gives an example. Man in the dream feels that he is moving. In the dream he wanders so many places. He experiences many actions done by the body in the dream. But despite the movements and the activities in the dream, his body is still. In dream he is engaged in so many expeditions and excursions, but his body is still motionless. It's the same body which is moving about in the dream, but in reality the body is absolutely still. The divine is in that body. So even when there is so much of activity that is going on, but still the body is still. So there is movement and there is stillness. Swami is saying, in the same way, when we are constantly engaged in activity, what is still in the body is the divine. Just like when you're dreaming, you're busy, but the body is still. Similarly, when we are engaged in all sorts of activities, in the waking state also, the divine inside is still. And that is why the divine is both unmoving and moving. It is because of the body that you're able to dream, but the body is still. Similarly, it is because of the reason why you're able to do these activities is that waking state. But what is still in that waking state is the divine. So that which is moving and non-moving, that is divine. Charam, acharam, charamevacha. He is non-moving and moving. The dream is happening and the body is still. We are engaged in many activities, but inside the divine is still. To make an attempt to unravel this mystery is what is jnana, Swami says. Jnana means to know. Na refers to that which cannot be known. Therefore, jnana refers to that which cannot easily be comprehended. Advaita darshanam jnanam, Bhagavan says. The perception of the one without the second, that is what is truly wisdom. To understand that there is only one, there is no second. In such a situation, there is actually nothing to be known because there is no knowledge, there is no knower, there is no knowing. But every man has to strive to recognize the divinity that is present in all beings. Only when we make that effort will one day we come to this understanding of reality, that there is only unity in everything around. There is only one. Did the divine fragment himself in a myriad ways? Swami is saying no. Without fragmenting itself, the divine is present in all beings. The divine does not have to fragment himself to be present everywhere or in all beings. Just like the sun's image can be seen in an ocean, a river, a lake, a pond or a well. And everywhere the sun is shining, wherever the sun is reflecting, are there different suns? No. The objects reflecting the image of the sun are varied and they are different from one another. Names and forms are different, but in all beings the same God, without being divided, shines as the indweller. Although bodies may appear with different names and forms, the divine is one. And the divine has not fragmented himself, not divided himself. The divine is always one. Slowly we have to do that inquiry to come to the understanding about the unity, about this only principle of the universe that exists, which truly unifies everything into one. Everything emerges from one and everything indeed is only one. In the early 90s, an overseas group of 20 devotees from Indonesia visited Prashanthi Nilayam for Bhagwan's darshan, and they had planned to stay in Puttaparthi for 10 days. Back then, Bhagwan usually gave interviews to such groups, especially from foreign countries. So every day this Indonesian group sat in the darshan grounds with hearts filled with anticipation And Bhagwan would look at them, but Swami would not call them inside. A week passed in this manner. There were only 3 days left, and there was no way they could extend their stay because their return flights were booked. The 8th day also was uneventful, and now the tensions started rising. And they kept feeling how unlucky it would be to return home without an interaction with Swami, because in those days the groups from overseas had many opportunities of interaction with Bhagwan. And 8 days are over and they just left one more day. On the morning of the 9th day, they are hoping if something would happen, and something beautiful indeed happened. Bhagwan was keenly looking at the group, and from a distance, when Swami saw them, as he came near, he asked the leader, "How many? How many?" And the man got up and said, 20, Swami. Swami said, "Oh, 20 only?" And then Swami pointed to himself and said, Am I not part of the group?" And the leader caught the point and corrected himself instantly. And he said, sorry, Swami. "No, Swami, we are 21. But by the time the leader said this, Swami had moved on. He had sort of failed in the question-answer session, in the quiz. So Bhagwan moved on and everyone was crestfallen. It was a golden opportunity lost. Generally, when Bhagwan asks a group how many, it is an indication that he would be calling that group for an interview. He wants to know how many people are there. But then, a satisfactory answer was not given, and Bhagwan did not indicate that they should come for the interview, so everyone was feeling so sad. They were wondering if he will call them in the evening. So some devotees consoled themselves and said, "Maybe Bhagwan will be kind enough to call us in the afternoon." So, fortunately for them, as Bhagwan glided among the devotees during the evening darshan session, he did come near them. And again Bhagwan looked at the group leader, and Swami said, "How many?" Now that the group leader had learnt his lesson, he immediately said, "21, Swami, 21. Now Swami looked at the devotees sitting beside the leader, and Swami asked each one of them, "Hey, am I not there with you? And you, am I not there with you?" And the leader now was smart enough to grasp that clue, and he blurted out, "Swami, we are 40, we are not 20, Swami, we are not 21, we are 40. You are there with each one of us." But by the time he said that, Bhagwan had already moved a little ahead. But still, Swami turned and Swami said, "Oh, you're 40, you're so many. My room is too small, it's too big a number to fit into the small interview room." And Bhagwan moved on. Now the group did not know what to do. Every day it was a difficult puzzle to solve. The penultimate day was over. Now everyone's heart started to sink. They were thinking how unfortunate they are. They had 2 chances to talk to Bhagwan, but that did not convert into group interview. All they have now is those moments of interaction, intriguing interaction with the Lord. The next morning was the last darshan. Having lost all hope of any interview with him, now they just long for one good darshan, and they thought they'll go back home with the memory of this darshan. They will carry this image in their hearts. And that morning too, Bhagwan lovingly came near them, and again with great love, Bhagwan asked the leader, "How many?" The 3rd time, the same question. And now the senior devotee was so confused, so clueless, he simply held on to Bhagwan's hands and he just broke down because he did not want to give any answer. how can you answer the one who is constantly raising you, constantly unraveling the delusions in you? So that man, just best thing is to surrender. He just surrendered his mind to Swami and he pleaded for Swami's love and grace, and Swami also very lovingly caressed him, blessed him and continued the darshan. But he did not say anything about interview. Now the whole group was in tears. Not only the leader, the entire group, because the way Bhagwan showered his love at the leader and he looked at all of them with so much love. Well, they were moved, and that scene itself was such a cherishable moment. That was their final opportunity. Nothing else they could hope for. And they thought that maybe this is what we deserve. We don't deserve anything more than this. Maybe better luck next time. And as they looked at Bhagwan with teary eyes, and Bhagwan was completing the darshan rounds, and Bhagwan moved towards the main veranda, the group with their wet eyes were still glued to his form. They wanted to savor whatever they could gather. When Bhagwan reached the center of the veranda, Swami suddenly turned his eye towards the group, and Swami raised his hand and Swami gestured, "Come." Wow, really? Did he really ask us to come? People, they could not believe what was happening. They wiped their tears and they rushed towards Bhagwan in excitement. And, you know, that was the opening of floodgates of heavenly joy, because you never thought that this is going to happen. And Swami filled their hearts with so much joy in the interview room. He created a ring for someone, chain for someone, gave vibhuti to the third person. He advised the fourth person about his problems. The session went on and on for 45 minutes. Everyone had their sweet moment with the Lord. And at one point, Bhagwan suddenly looked at the leader and Swami said, "See, we are one. We are not 20. We are not 40. And Swami said, "In the Satya Sai organization, there should be no differentiation between one and another. No one is big. No one is small. There is no individual identification of this community or that community. We are one. We work as one. The sole aim is to feel one with the only one. Only when we have this feeling of oneness with God at all times will we experience true bliss. Then every service activity of ours will fill us with supreme joy." This was the message of Bhagwan. In the beginning of this segment, Swami is telling the devotee, if you are saying that you are embodiment of joy, why can't you be in joy all the time? And here Bhagwan is telling, only when we have this feeling of oneness with God at all times will we experience true bliss. Then everything we do will fill us with supreme joy. Unity in diversity is to see the same divinity in all. When we talk about unity in diversity, what it truly means is we should be able to see the same spark in all. Diversity in unity is to marvel at the myriad manifestations of the same divinity in all. What is this diversity in unity? It is to look at the various manifestations of the same divine. That is diversity in unity. And unity in unity is when the diversity of the seer, the seen, and the act of seeing disappear. where we have to move towards is unity in unity. There is no diversity because there is no seer, there is no seen, there is no act of seeing. There is no doer, there is no doing, there is no act of doing the work. Because it's, everything is only one. There is only one, the be all and end all of all. In that Guru Purnima discourse which I mentioned, which Bhagavan gave on 2nd of July 1985, Swami says, that reality is there everywhere. In this segment, Swami is telling you should know the reality. Swami is telling that reality is there everywhere. Why? It is evident most in oneself, but you have to seek it. You can experience it even while performing selflessly your duty to yourself and others. And then Bhagavan says, I will give you four directives for sanctifying your lives and for purifying your mind so that you can contact this God within, contact this unifying principle within. And Swami says, Teja Durjana Samsargam, give up the company of the wicked. Bhaja Sadhu Samagamam, welcome the chance to be among the good. Bhaja Sadhu Samagamam. Kuru Punyam Ahoratram, do good deeds both day and night. Smara Nitya Anityatam, constantly contemplate on that which is lasting and that which is temporary. And Swami says, we have to make this attempt on these lines. If you don't make this attempt, then obviously there will be sorrow, and we cannot blame God for our sorrows. Man blames God because he announces himself as a devotee too soon and expects plentiful grace, Swami says. God cannot be claimed by such people. You have to wait for God to accept the devotee as his own. God, you have to wait for God to tell you are my own. Doing punyam or good deeds means doing selfless service to others, Swami is saying. One has to flee from bad persons, your move from bad persons, move away from bad persons to search for, be with the good who can clean us, the good who can heal us. And many times you may not find a person who is good in the sense that who knows who is good and who is not good. There is good and bad in everyone. But maybe what we can do is to be with the goodness in everyone. There is something good in everyone. We can be with the goodness in everyone. Swami says, if you spend your time being with the goodness, that is what is Bhaja Sadhu Samagamam Karap Teja Durjana Samsarkam Kuru Punyam Ahoratram, do these good deeds and Smara Nitya Nityatyam, and that is very important. Constantly be inquiring into what is permanent and what is temporary, what is lasting and what is evanescent, what remains and what keeps changing. If you constantly contemplate on this, then soon we will have some understanding of the reality and we will learn how to be in joy. We will learn how to experience that ananda all the time. That's what Swami is telling. It is only when you have so many eyes that you need someone's support. When all is one, why seek help? When that eye is gone, whom to speak to? Who listens? All are one. While it is a very difficult concept to live in daily life, that's the reason why Swami has given us these four principles. If you practice these four principles, we will slowly reach that stage of living in that reality, constantly living in that consciousness of the true reality. The steps are Tejadvichana Samsargam, move away from bad company. Bhajasadhu Samagamam, be in the company of the good. Kurupunya Ahoratram, do sacred acts and deeds. Smaranitya Anityatam, constantly contemplate on what is true and what is changing. I think if we constantly make this effort, then slowly the feeling of I and minus will reduce and we will move closer to that experience of mukti. We will move closer to that experience of Brahmananda. We will move closer to that experience of being in bliss all the time. Being in a happiness that needs no reason. Just like God is. We need to have more such God moments in our lives. And that is possible once we take to these four steps and try in our own way to make them a part of our life. Dear listeners, we'll continue this in the coming episode. There are many more deeper concepts that Bhagavan has mentioned in chapter 10 of Sandeha Nivarani. We'll make our little efforts to get at least some understanding of what Bhagavan has said so that we can use these precious directions to fill our lives with ceaseless joy. Thank you so much, Sai Ram. As always, if you have any queries, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. You can also send us your comments on our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. Offering this little endeavor at his lotus feet, in all humility, I take your leave. Thank you so much, Sai Ram.